revised sighting in Lord's version, text number 2. Different forms of the living entities are different dresses offered by the illusory external energy of the Lord according to the modes of nature the living being desires to enjoy. The external material energy is represented by her three modes, namely goodness, passion and ignorance. So even in the material nature there is a chance of an independent choice by the living entity. And according to his choice, the material energy offers him different varieties of material bodies. There are bodies, 1,100,000 worms and reptiles, 1,000,000 forms of birds. Together, there are 8,400,000 varieties of bodies in different planets of the universe. And the living entity is travelling by so many transmigrations according to different modes of enjoying spirit within himself. Even in one particular body, the living entity changes from childhood to boyhood, from boyhood to youth, from youth to old age, and from old age to another body created by his own action. The living entity creates his own body by his personal desires, and the external energy of the Lord supplies him the exact form by which he can enjoy his desires to the fullest extent. The tiger wanted to enjoy the blood of another animal, and therefore, by the grace of the Lord, the material energy supplied him the body of the tiger with facilities for enjoying blood from another animal. Similarly, a living entity desiring to get the body of a demigod in a higher planet can also get it by the grace of the Lord. And, if he is intelligent enough, he can desire to get a spiritual body to enjoy the company of the Lord, and he will get it. So, the minute freedom of the living entity can be fully utilized, and the Lord is so kind that he will award the living entity the same type of body he desires. The living entity's desiring is like dreaming of a golden mountain. A person knows what a mountain is, and he knows also what gold is. Out of his desire only, he dreams of a golden mountain. And when the dream is over, he sees something else in his presence. He finds in his awakened state that There is neither gold nor a mountain. And what to speak of a golden mountain? The different positions of the living entities in the material world and the multifarious manifestations of bodies are due to the misconception of mine and I. The Kami thinks of this world as mine. And the Jnani thinks, I am everything. The whole material conception of politics, sociology, philanthropy, altruism, etc., conceived by the conditioned souls, is on the basis of this misconceived I and mine, which are products of a strong desire to enjoy material life. Identification with the body and the place where the body is obtained under different conceptions of socialism, nationalism, family affection, and so on and so forth, is all due to forgetfulness of the real nature of the living entity. The whole misconception of the bewildered living entity can be removed by the association of Sukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit, as all this is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Aryanati Nirandasya Yananjana Sadakaya Chakshurudhulitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Devati Svapadamayam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pamulam Gayate Karim Yakripatamam Vande Sri Gurum Dinatavinam. Bahu Rupaha, mentioned twice. Bahu Rupaha, Bahu Rupaya. Bahu Rupa Eva Abhati Mayaya Bahu Rupaya. So in the previous verse it's mentioned that the pure, unadulterated, unconditioned spirit soul is always manifest in its original state. Naturally transcendental to the material world and its original position is fully experienced in its constitutional position of service in the spiritual world. But under the influence of the external energy, as we mentioned yesterday, Mama Maya Dulachara, Daivi Hiyeshu Gunamayi Mama Maya Dulachara. Very difficult to overcome this energy of Krishna. And it's only by Krishna's will that the pure, unconditioned state of the spirit soul is covered by this ignorance or forgetfulness. And in this state, under the influence of Krishna's energy, the material energy, the exterior energy. And it's interesting because material energy by itself cannot produce material forms. Right? Why is that? Why can't the material energy produce forms by itself?
No life.
No life. It's inert. Material energy is dead. Right? Material energy is dead. But result of the desires of the living entity to be separate from Krishna, to more or less to usurp Krishna's position, to take his position, then in that forgetful state, the Lord is able to, or the material energy under the control of the Lord is able to cast her spell over the originally pure spirit soul and give them the forms that they have, as Prabhupada says here, from childhood to boyhood to youth to old age to ultimately out of this body and then into another body. And as Prabhupada explains, 1,100,000 species of life as a, what was it? A bird or a worm? A worm or a reptile? One million forms of birds. 1,100,000 worms and reptiles. So, when the Lord glances over the material energy, which is originally inert, then it's activated, and all of those spirit souls are then placed by His glance, just as the male impregnates the female by inserting the semen within the womb. So similarly, the Lord activates the material energy simply by His glance. He doesn't have to touch it. Although in one sense, you know, there is a touch. Right? The senses touch. The eyes touch the object of the eyes, which is the form. Right? But it's not quite the same as touch with the fingers. Or touch with the tongue. Or even smell with the nose. That's a little bit more subtle. Right, smelling with the nose. But seeing with the eyes is a very subtle form of touch. So that's how the Lord impregnates the living entity. And then by the power, the mystic potency invested within Maya, the living entities are then conditioned. Although it is interesting, the living entities are conscious, and so therefore, because of consciousness, they're superior to the material energy. But because of their desire to compete with Krishna, to lord it over the material energy, then they're kind of weakened. They lose their spiritual potency and get covered over by the material energy. You know, it's a bit like Superman is weakened by kryptonite. Have you seen that? I used to watch Superman when I was a child. And it was in black and white in those days. And I used to have these. Actually, we didn't have a television in our house. My father said the television rots your brains. Although I notice he watches a lot of television now. But he never used to let us watch television. So we were allowed to go to our friend's place who was next door, and we were allowed to watch Superman. But I used to be really scared. I'd come home at night and it would be dusk. And then I was scared that somehow Superman would fly out of the sky. But anyway, Superman, in one sense, the living entity is like Superman. Powerful. More powerful than the material energy. But when she came in rather unhappy, didn't she? When the living entity is weakened by material desires, then instead of being superior to the material energy, one gets covered over by them. One is attracted to the forms. One's attracted to the external features of the material energy, the forms, and well, basically the forms that it presents. One becomes bewildered by them, and one wants to try and enjoy. Not able to see things from a spiritual perspective. So the material energy, the material desires, or the desire to enjoy the material world is a bit like kryptonite weakens Superman. There's one episode where Superman, there was this lump of kryptonite and he came close to it and then he could hardly stand up. This desire to enjoy takes away all of the spiritual potency that exists within the spirit soul. Just like we were discussing yesterday, the process of devotional service is such that it uncovers or reawakens that spiritual potency within, or that exists within us. And we again get connected, we get reconnected to our spiritual identity. And then when we're reconnected to the spiritual identity, we're able to withstand or withhold, or we're able to remain aloof from the allurements of the material energy. Basically by experiencing a higher taste. Because Prabhupada says, so long as we have a material body, there'll be material desires. Right? What's an example of having a material desire in a material body that even the Paramahamsas, yes, the Paramahamsas may be able to transcend, but most ordinary transcendentalists can't. Give me an example. No, not necessarily, because one can transcend that fairly easily. Breakfast time. Breakfast time. But the bhakti process is so powerful that you can take prasadam, right? And then it's devotional service, right? Regulated devotional service. Yuktahara. Regulated eating. And not, you know, whoa. One has to control the senses by engaging them in devotional activities. Now, when we do that, we get a higher taste. And so, just as Krishna explains in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, an advanced transcendentalist is like the river. It's like the ocean. The rivers of desire may flow into the mind of the transcendentalist, but his mind is like the ocean. Very, very deep. What was that example? Who gave that example? Was it? Who gave that example the other day? About how there may be disturbances on the surface, but deep down it's not disturbed. Who gave that example? Was it in class? Where did I hear that? Somebody gave the example. Maybe it was Ramaswami. Because, you know, sometimes Prabhupada would get angry with his disciples. They'd do something silly. And one of the devotees said to Prabhupada, you know, pure devotees sometimes get angry. And Prabhupada made a comment that there may be some waves on the top of the ocean, but deep down is very, very steady and very deep. So, you know, there may even be some little disturbance, but deep down, the devotee is not attracted to the material energy. You know, a materialist gets angry. Why? Because his material desires are frustrated. A devotee may get angry, but that's because his service to Krishna is being impeded. That's a completely different thing. Not at all the same. Because he's deeply fixed on his devotional service. So, you know, the rivers of desire may flow. You know, as a result of our association with the material energy, then desires will come up. That's natural. Because the mind is the repository of so much experience and so much association with the material energy that when we come in contact with the various circumstances and situations, then that will trigger associations. Naturally. But they don't impel the advanced devotee to act. He's able to remain fixed and absorbed, or she is able to remain fixed, absorbed in their service to Krishna. And so, you know, the activities of a devotee may appear like the same activities as a mundane person, but actually they're not, because they understand. Isavasyam idam sarvam. Right? Everything within the creation is owned by the Supreme Lord, the controller. Just like the Prabhupada gives the example of the bank teller. He's counting all of the money, but he doesn't think, "Oh, this is mine." He knows it belongs to Westpac or CBA or whatever, ANZ. If the bank teller takes some of the money thinking it's his, then he's a thief. So similarly also, the living entities, when they have this mentality of I am the enjoyer, then they take away from Krishna, then they become thieves. They have a thief-like mentality. And so as a result of that mentality, that Maya has a rather thankless task. But her job is to punish the thieves. Right? That's her job. Not a very pleasant task. Her job is to... Krishna wants to see us out, but Maya's job is to keep us in the material world forever. And that's her service. That's her devotion. Maya's devotional service is to keep us in the material world. How do you like that? That's why some living entities who like to inflict pain on others get an opportunity, if they're a little pious, to take birth as the Yamadutas. Right? And they bring people to the Yamaraj and then punish them. But ultimately, this is all under Krishna's direction. And so they get multi-forms here, multi-form, bahu rupa. According to our desires, then there are 8,400,000 species of existence. And within those species, there's also variety. Right? Not, we're all humans, or close to it. Right? But each one of us is different. Each one of us is an individual. Each one of us has their own peculiarities. Yeah? All provided by the modes of material nature, all provided by the material energy represented in, or manifest through those modes. Now, Prabhupada gives the example of the tiger. The tiger wants to enjoy blood, or the living entity wants to enjoy sucking the blood of others. Right? So what does he do? He gets the body of a mosquito. Or if he's got a really strong desire, you know, gets stuck into things, lion or a tiger. Everybody's scared of a lion or a tiger. That's a gross example. But then, as Prabhupada says, one can be elevated to the position of a demigod. There's one Bhagavatam class where Prabhupada says, you want to be a demigod? You can have it. He will give it. He's talking about the super soul. You want to be a dog? He will give it. So whatever we want, if we meditate on that enough, then we will get it. Now, the interesting thing is, Prabhupada says here, if we desire to get a spiritual body, then we can get it. That's the superior type of form. That's our original form. And so that's the superior type of desire. But in order to have that desire, we have to give up the desire to enjoy the material world. That's the hard part. That's the very, very hard part. Because we've been associated with the material energy for so long. And that cycle of contemplation and then attachment and then desire to enjoy has been going on for so long. That's what makes us conditioned. The process of devotional service is designed in such a way so that we break that conditioning. Prabhupada gives the example of you know, the desires of the living entity are like dreams. We dream of different things. Right? What do we dream of? Each one of us has got our own private dreams. Right? Probably best unspoken, some of them. Those dreams will take us to that destination, right? Whatever consciousness or whatever state of mind we have cultivated throughout our life, that state of consciousness or mind will carry us to our next destination. Which will then be, in that next lifetime, will we have another set of dreams. They'll carry us to the next destination. Each time we realise that the previous destination was just a phantasmagoria. As like Prabhupada says here, one knows of gold and a mountain, and then we dream of a golden mountain. But then when we wake up, we have neither gold, nor a mountain, nor a golden mountain. We don't. All of those things are temporary and limited. And so as a result of that, they're dukkhalaya ashaspatam. Everything is ultimately brings us pain. You know, there's that story of Harshashoka. Harshashoka, the son of Chitraketu. Chitraketu couldn't have a son. And so he was lamenting, oh, I can't have a son. She had so many wives and none of them could give him a son. But then Narada Muni and Angira Rishi came and he begged them, please, I want a son. And they wanted to liberate Chitraketu. You're in Maya. But they couldn't. They could see he's too attached. So they said, all right, you can have a son, but there'll be, you will call him Harshashoka, happiness and distress. That will be his name. He will bring great happiness, but he'll also be the source of great distress. So Chitraketu Maharaj thought, oh, that's okay, you know. Children will be naughty. Huh? But I have a son. So the son was born, but and because of the affection and attention that was being showered upon the son and the mother, the other wives of the king became envious, and so they poisoned and killed the son. And so then the king was beside himself. Previously he was joyful. Oh, my son, I've got a son. Huh? Who was happy? Who's got sons here? Huh? Were you happy when you got a son? Huh? Mothers are usually happy to have survived childbirth. Yeah. So he was very happy, always showering affection and attention on his son, but that upset everybody else. So they poisoned him. And then he was beside himself with distress. And at that time then Angira Muni and Narada Muni happened to come along. And he again implored them, my son is gone, please bring him back. So they said, all right. So they brought the son back to life, and then the Maharaj Shivaka said, oh, my son, it's so good to see you. And then the boy said, who are you? Who? I'm your father. She said, father? There's so many fathers. Which one are you? Dog fathers, pig fathers, bird fathers. So many fathers. And because he was so attached to his son, he listened to him intently. Angira Muni and Narada Muni knew that he wouldn't listen to them. Huh? So they create this situation so that Maharaj Chitraketu would see the illusory nature, the power of illusion that covers us, covers our original spiritual identity. And so his son then preached to his father to wake him up. So when we wake up from our dreamlike state, then we realize that the material world is just a phantasmagoria. It's like the clouds of mist, the mist of ignorance that covers our original. One's not able to see things as they actually are because the scenery is covered by this phantasmagoria. So, these desires, material desires, are what keeps us entrapped. But if our desires are, and so sometimes people think, therefore we have to get rid of desire. This is kind of the Buddhist philosophy, you know. My karma is as a result of all of my desires, so therefore let's get rid of desire. But that's not possible. Right? The mind is always working. You can't stop it. Aniruddha is the lord of the mind. And Aniruddha means one who cannot be stopped. That's Krishna. If Krishna wants something, you can't stop it. And the same with the mind. If you think you're going to stop the mind, forget about it. It's not going to happen. But if we put if we desire and meditate on spiritual activities within utilizing the mind for its proper purpose, right? We don't get rid of the mind or stop the mind. You can't. We purify it so that the contemplation and the meditation is on spiritual sense objects. Why we worship the deity. Why we take prasadam. We're engaging the mind and the senses in absorption of spiritual practice, spiritual activity. You know, Rupa Goswami mentions in the Upadeshamrita that the beauty of chanting Hare Krishna is that it attacks the disease at the root. Which means by chanting, we purify. Our tendency is to want to talk about this and that and the other thing. So many things. All material. What example does Prabhupada use in describing the speech of the materialists? What? Yeah. The croaking of frogs. And what is the croaking of frogs doing? Inviting what?
Snake.
Snake of death. Right? So we're croaking away. The snake is just listening. And we're absorbing our mind and our consciousness in all material things. So when the snake of death bites, then we have to go to another material body. But if we chant and hear and supplant the material topics and the material meditations with spiritual topics and spiritual meditation, then the mind and the senses become purified. In the beginning, when we're chanting Hare Krishna or when we're hearing transcendental subject matters, we sometimes find it difficult. You know, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, sometimes it just feels so dry and hard and impossible. But devotional life seems impossible. I can't do it. It's not working. But if we just keep... That's not unusual. Just like a person with jaundice, when they take sugar candy, which is the cure for jaundice, then the sugar candy tastes bitter. But the sugar candy is actually sweet. The process of devotional service in the beginning may taste a little bitter or a little austere, but actually it's not. It's always sweet all the way through. But and so, just as a jaundiced person has to take the sugar, so we also have to take the medicine. And gradually, the medicine, even though it might taste a little bitter in the beginning, will gradually purify us. So that we can cultivate, we want to cultivate spiritual activities and spiritual desires. It looks like it looks as if it is just ordinary work. Right? Looks like ordinary work. But it is not ordinary work. It is transcendental, pure, devotional service. It's the mentality that has to be changed. It's the mentality that keeps us in the material world. And so it's the mentality that will take us out. And this is why we have the Maha Mantra, because the Maha Mantra frees us from the viciousness of material meditation and purifies us and transports us into the realm of spiritual meditation. So the cultivation of desires is wanted in spiritual life. There is a certain restriction, you know, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. There are certain restrictions. But pretty much, you know, most everything that we desire, apart from those things, can be dovetailed into Krishna's service. And then it becomes purifying. So even, you know, in the impersonalist tradition, you have to be a sannyasi. Maharaj was saying this the other day, in order to make spiritual progress. But in the Vaishnava tradition, it's everybody. Men, women, children, young, middle-aged, old, everybody. Process of devotional service is so powerful. It can purify. And so then we get the advantage, especially we get the advantage in the human form of life. Of course, we can be engaged in devotional service. We were reading the other day, animals can also be engaged in devotional service. But take advantage, we need to take advantage of the human form. We've got the human form of life, and so now, what is it? Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now you've come to the human form of life, use it, inquire, and hear, and serve. Susrushu means one who hears. But I was listening to Gopi Paranadana Prabhu yesterday saying that one who is susrushu, who is here, by convention, it means one also who is prepared to serve. Right? Susrushu means one who's going to hear. But one who hears should then act on what he's heard. That's the process. That's what's being illustrated here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Karmis think and hear and talk about materialistic activities. That's natural. And we will also think and talk and hear about Krishna. If you don't think of and hear and talk about Krishna, then you'll think and hear about something else. Huh? So that's why we have the Association of the Devotees. It's why we have the Srimad Bhagavatam. The answer to all questions is contained within the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you've got a problem, take it to the Bhagavatam. Right? Very powerful. Srimad Bhagavatam was the sages at Naimisharanya had elevated Sutta Goswami to be their speaker because he'd heard them. But before that, they'd heard the other Vedas, they'd heard the Mahabharata, they'd heard all of the Vedas up until that point. So they'd been going, the sacrifice that they'd been performing had been going on for some time. But the final recitation was hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the topmost. Nigala Kalpata Rogalitam Phalam. It's the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. Which is one of the reasons why we render service to the Srimad Bhagavatam every day. It's the, Maharaj was saying the other day, it's a supplementary knowledge. Supplement means those things which added make the conglomerate whole. So the Prabhupada says here, the Kami thinks of this world as mine, and the Jnani thinks I am everything. Right? I am one with everything. And the Kami thinks it's all mine. You've got some of it, and that's mine, I'm going to take it off you. And so we have so much fighting, right? This is a materialistic mentality. Hey, that's mine. I saw it first. What do you mean it's yours? It's mine. I saw it. Just because they saw it, they think it's mine. Right? Like the English, they came to Australia. This is ours. Right? They went to India. Oh, this is ours too. The Dutch were doing the same thing. Oh, we went to Australia. Oh, it's ours. Indonesia, ours. But then when they saw that somebody else had something that they wanted, then they go and fight. The nature of material existence. And the Jnani, he thinks he is everything. Because he's one with everything. Because, in one sense, we are one with everything. We're all manifestations of the Brahman. Right? We're all extensions of Brahman. But we're not the Parabrahman. This is a misidentification. There are, what is it? Vedanti tattva. What's the first word? Vedanti tattva. Vidas, is it? Jnanam, yajjnanam, advayam. Brahmeti, paramatmeti, bhagavaniti, samyate. So within the Brahman, there are varieties. There's the Brahman feature, there's the Paramatma feature, there's the Bhagavan feature. And from the Brahman also comes the material energy. So in one sense, everything is emanating from the Supreme, everything's emanating from the Brahman. And so in that sense, everything is Brahman, right? In that sense, because of that connection, it's all coming. But that doesn't mean it's all equal. It's all the same. The Brahman has varieties of forms. The example that Prabhupada gives of milk sweets are made from milk and sugar. You can have sandesh, you can have burfi, you can have rasgulla, rasmalai, Russian rockets. That's a combination of rasgulla with burfi, like caramel, and you cut it open and then you squeeze it in. Buyer beware. I remember once we were staying at the Lakshmi Narayan Dhamshala in Calcutta, first trip to India, and the life members were providing us with milk sweets from one of the milk sweet shops, and the sandesh was just amazing. And I used to eat about 4 or 5 every breakfast. And then eventually I became so sick I can't eat sandesh anymore. So anyway, they're all milk and sugar, but they all have different varieties. So similarly also from the Brahman, different forms and different features are manifest, even the material creation. But just as the milk sweets taste different and act differently on the tongue, so similarly also these energies of the Lord or these manifestations of Brahman, they work differently. So even though we may be one with the Brahman, or in the sense that we come from Brahman, we're not all equal. We're not the Parabrahman, which is the Supreme. So this is, this idea that I am, everything is false. These mentalities, Prabhupada says, the mentality of the Kami and the mentality of the Jnani, and all of the misidentifications or misconceptions that come from that, socialism, nationalism, family affection, and so on, it all comes about as a result of forgetting our original identity. Jivera Svarupoi Nitya Krishna Das. We are a servant of Krishna. When we remember that, then we can be reinstated in that original position. And that's what the Srimad Bhagavatam is all about. Why we study and hear the Srimad Bhagavatam regularly is to rectify this faulty mentality. All answers all problems or all questions can be answered by the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the basis of the Srimad Bhagavatam is to teach us through the activities of the satyam, right? Satyam, param satyam dhimahi. At the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it's described how one will meditate on this satyam, the truth, but That Satyam is manifest in the form of the Param Satyam, that's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we meditate on Him and His activities, but also the Satyam, that is the devotees. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is not only about the Personality of Godhead, but it's about the Personality of Godhead and His devotees. And the devotees who demonstrate devotional service, they model and exemplify this principle of I'm Krishna's servant. So the basis of the Bhagavatam is to study the Supreme Personality of Godhead and also study His twadiya, His associates, His servants, and their pastimes and their interactions, their dealings. And, you know, gradually through progression come to the point of understanding the nature of the relationships, especially this relationship between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit, which is the basis almost of any spiritual endeavour. Right? Hearing from the right source and being a bona fide hearer. We have to hear from the right source, but we also have to have the right qualifications ourselves to hear properly. This is one of so many examples. But this one example is the key theme that runs through our sampradaya. Any sampradaya, any bona fide sampradaya, is that one has to hear from authority. We hear from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the supreme authority. Right? Not sure who's asking the question, but you know, the question is being asked, to whom will people go to seek out religiosity in the age of Kali when the Lord has ascended back into the spiritual world? To whom will people go? And the answer is that people can go to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Confirmed. So, you know, if we want to solve our problems, or if we're seeking answers to questions, then we can go to the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. These are amazing. This is, you know, and this is our process. The Bhagavatam is part of our spiritual practice and process. It exemplifies this, you know, the dealings between the guru and the disciple. But we can get association with Krishna, just as we can get association with Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, we can get association with Krishna in the form of the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which exemplifies this service to Krishna. Ekale Ishvara Krishna. There's one controller, that's Krishna, Arasava Britja. Everybody else is his Britja, his servant. That's us. And that's also exemplified in the relationship between guru and disciple. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. One hears and then one acts. One hears from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we should then go and act on those instructions. We hear from our spiritual teachers, the siksha gurus, and then we act. This is our system. Very interesting system, you know. Not that we only hear from one guru. No, we have many gurus, actually. Srimad Bhagavatam is one of them, in the form of a book. And then we're recommended to hear it regularly, in order to, you know, defeat this enjoying mentality, enjoying the material world mentality. And this I and mine mentality. That's the root, if you like, of that enjoying mood. It's mine. You know, you see it with children. If you're... not last weekend, but the weekend before, we were visiting the furniture stores looking for some furniture for our new house that we're moving into. And the Mr. Whippy truck came up and parked in the car park. Right, you know what Mr. Whippy is? Ice cream truck. And this couple came out of the store with three kids. Right, they saw the ice cream truck. Right. So Dad said, okay, I'll get you an ice cream. And then one of them said, I want this. No, I said, I want that. And he said, no, you're going to have all the same. Right? Because, you know, if you give one kid one and the other kid another, oh! Right? We're older, we see something, we're quiet, I don't want that. Right? We keep it within. We still want it, but we just... So we have to be careful about our contemplation and meditation. That's why we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, to change that mentality. I want. I, mine. It happens, you know, one of the kids comes to the temple with a toy. The other kids see it. Mine. Who came? One of the boys, Rishi. Was it Rishi came with a ball? The other kids got it. And then they lost it. Oh, where's my ball? Ultimately, all of these things will be taken away from us. In the meantime, while we have those attachments to material things, we learn from the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam how to use them in Krishna's service. Sukadeva Goswami is a very unique example because he was at the end of his life. But there are other examples. Amarish Maharaj is a very good example of how the householders can use things in Krishna's service. He's the king of the universe. But he taught by his personal example how to behave, how to use everything in Krishna's service. So, you know, there are lessons for all of us. At different stages of our existence, we'll need to learn different lessons. You know, at the time when we're old or older or facing death, then that's when you renounce. Right? But when you're a young man or young woman, unless one is naturally inclined to renunciation, then one has to learn how to utilize things and dovetail one's natural propensities, and they'll be there. You know, just because we're chanting Hare Krishna or we've taken initiation doesn't mean automatically Paramahamsa. I don't know if you've noticed or not. Right? Doesn't mean automatically Paramahamsa. But Paramahamsa, Paramahamsanam, you know, the Bhagavatam is considered the spotless Purana, because it only teaches us how to engage in devotional service. And the example of these great personalities shows us, Prahlad Maharaj and others, Prithu Maharaj, so many personalities, show us how to connect with Krishna through the process of devotional service. And so that's why we regularly hear Satam Prasangam Mamavirya Sampiro. And in hearing, in the association of the devotees, Krishna's potency comes to us. There's a power in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of the devotees, when there's a qualified speaker and a qualified hearer. That potency, Krishna says, is Mama Virya, it's my Shakti. That Shakti comes within the heart and it purifies. It purifies our consciousness so that we can see the ways in which we can take our ordinarily material position and transform it into spiritual action. That's what devotional service is all about. Not becoming a big renunciate and doing nothing. We can't do that. Big renunciate in devotional service is taking what we've got. Family, job, you know, for the most of us, when we're householders, using it for Krishna service, for the brahmacharis, for the sannyasis. Also, instructions are there in the examples of personalities like Narada Muni, Angira Rishi, you know, the Karabhajanas, the Navajogendras. Right? The Navajogendras is an example. And others, other many examples for the renunciates. Very powerful, Srimad Bhagavatam. So that everybody becomes absorbed in thoughts. Krishna says, Mamana. He doesn't say stop thinking. He says, think of me. So that means thinking of Krishna, thinking of Krishna's devotees, thinking of Krishna's service. That's all Krishna. Krishna thought, Krishna action, Krishna talk. That's what we want. And that's what the Bhagavatam teaches. And all of that changes this mentality of aham, mameti, or what is it here? Mama aham. I am mine. I, me, mine. George Harrison wrote that song. I, me, mine. All over the world, I, me, mine. Hey, that's mine. Get out of here, you. But the devotees see things in the right perspective. Hey, mate, it's Krishna's. We'll take it for Krishna's service. Well, we may not take it for Krishna's service. That was the motto of the 70s. No, because we should, in the Ishapanishad it says, we should be mindful of whom everything belongs, to whom everything belongs, and what is set aside is one's quota. So everything belongs to God, but he's setting it aside for each of us to share, and he gives each of us our quota. So that doesn't mean that just because somebody else has got it and it belongs to Krishna, you can just pinch it off of them. Each one of us is given a quota. But we're supposed to use that quota in Krishna's service, knowing well to whom it belongs. Right? That's why we put the tilak on our forehead every morning or every time we have a shower, right? We put tilak on. And why are we putting the tilak on? To remind us that this body is not ours. But ultimately, it's like a house that doesn't belong to us. We're tenants in this house, and we're only tenants in this house temporarily. Right? So to remind us, we put the mark of the owner of the house. Right? Just like we put the cross on a church or a chakra on top of the temple. Inside that temple, we only perform devotional service. It's dedicated to the service of God. So similarly also, the tilak on the body is to remind us this body is dedicated to the service of Krishna. Because we put the tilak on and then we forget and we go off and do other things. But that's what it's for, is to remind us. And so when people see us, they are reminded of Krishna also. And they're reminded who that belongs. I'll tell you a funny story. Gyan and I went to the dump yesterday. We were tipping the rubbish off. And there was a guy, they have these big Caterpillar front end loaders, huge thing, you know. and they just plough through the... You tip the rubbish into this trench, it's a concrete construction, and then he just comes along with his big truck, front-end loader, and just pushes it all through. And I said to Gowan, look, this is the end of existence, right? Just smashed all up. But anyway, this guy stopped the track and he said, you two are brothers, eh? I said, no, mate, he's a Kiwi and I'm an Aussie. And I said, we're spiritual brothers, we're Hare Krishnas. And then Gana told him how, yeah, he's the temple president and people come and complain to me. Because they think I'm him. But he was laughing and then he said, I reckon you Hare Krishnas have got the best life. So anyway, there you go. We've got the best life. Of course, he doesn't really know, but anyway, that was his... that was his conclusion. You've got the best life. All right, does anybody have any comments or questions?
What sort of Bhagavatam can we read?
What sort of Bhagavatam? I think
there are different versions of Bhagavatam we have.
Oh, okay.
And Srila Prabhupada himself has given one version. So we have so many versions. We have got that one as well, but is it acceptable that we can go through all versions?
That's a good question. Generally speaking, we recommend Prabhupada's Bhagavatam. Reason being that he is recognized and appreciated by the members of ISKCON as being unique in our history or within our tradition, in that he is a contemporary, if you like, right? And specially empowered to present Krishna consciousness in the current milieu, in the modern setting, right? He came to the West. His presentation of the Bhagavatam was in consideration of an international audience, of a wide audience. He knew that it was predicted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that the hearing and chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra would be distributed all over the world. It was that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had predicted that this would take place, that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati wanted, even Krishna himself had predicted that there would be a personality who would bring the Maha Mantra and spread it all around the world. So Prabhupada knew these predictions existed, and he himself is appreciated by those who follow him as that person who was uniquely empowered to present Krishna consciousness such that it spread all over the world. Right? Krishna could do it, but he chose not to. He chose to empower Srila Prabhupada. And we know that Srila Prabhupada was encouraged by his spiritual master to print books and distribute them. And so Prabhupada took that responsibility on, and his prime focus was on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? He would rise, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, every day pretty much, and then he would translate. And the books were written for us. So and not only that, he drew from the tradition, from the tikkas of Jiva Goswami, of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, from Sridhar Swami. I think Prabhupada had something like 8 commentaries, and there's books that have those commentaries in them. the commentaries of Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami. So Prabhupada drew from the tradition and from his own practice of Krishna consciousness, and we know from his being specifically empowered by Lord Chaitanya and the previous acharyas to present Krishna consciousness in a unique way that was relevant and pertinent in a language that was easily accessible to us. So members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness recommend or encourage people to read this version of the Srimad Bhagavatam first. Then we can put the other... Then, we'll, you know, when we've assimilated this Srimad Bhagavatam... Actually, Prabhupada recommends Nectar of Devotion, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Bhagavad Gita. If you understand those four books, then you'll be sufficiently learned to be able to convince anybody, really, of Krishna consciousness. And also be able to appreciate the teachings of the previous acharyas. So, now, there's also an etiquette here. The etiquette, as is explained by Srila Prabhupada to us, is that one shouldn't jump over the previous acharya, you know, one should follow the tradition, and the tradition is to receive instructions from the current spiritual guides, and in our case, the founder acharya. The founder acharya has a unique position within ISKCON. And so, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, we don't jump over, if you like, Srila Prabhupada, because of his unique relationship to all of us as a founder acharya. And his teachings manifestations of Srila Prabhupada's will and desire and mission, if you like, for us. So, you know, certainly you can read any and every Bhagavatam, but we would recommend that, first of all, study this particular version. How's that sound? Given the behaviour of some of the human beings, it's one wonders. It may be they got the human form simply as a result of exhausting all of their karmic reactions in the previous forms of animals, that they've been now elevated into the human form of life. But in the Kali Yuga, the human form of life is not very elevated at all. But it still affords the same opportunities as the human form of life would in previous yugas. And so if we can get the good fortune of associating with the devotees and thereby purify our, you know, animalistic propensities and tendencies by purifying them through the process of devotional service, then we can get the full advantage of the human form of life. So, you know, in some cases we see there's a desire for elevation and for exaltation. And so therefore the human life, form of life, you know, has that feature, has that desire must be manifest in those who get the human form of life to some degree or another. In fact, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, and the Bhagavatam explains also, that the fortunate living entity in the womb of the mother prays, "O Lord, what have I done? No, I've done it again. Right? Let me out of here, this time. Don't let me get bewildered by the association of the materialistic people. That's the prayer in the womb. But then he comes out and everybody's going, "Gucci, Gucci, Gucci," and he forgets. "Oh, you're such a sweetie, you're a real cutie, you're so intelligent." My mum used to tell me all the time, "Oh, you're so intelligent." I believed her. And then I was doing all stupid things. My parents would say, "Oh, you're stupid. Why aren't you telling me I'm intelligent? But I'm stupid. What's going on around here?" So you get bewildered, right? 1 minute in your life, you can't do anything wrong. Then the next minute, everything's wrong. And you can't work out what's going on. What's going on around this place? The material world is a bewildering... Of course, you know, when you're a baby, you're all cute and sweet and everything. You know, by the time you get to 2 or 3, you're a little... You know, my parents used to have to tie me up with one of those strap harnesses with a strap on. You have to do that to Droof? No? You spend a lot of time running around chasing them, right? My parents didn't. She had me firmly on a leash, right? So what does that mean? Just like a little dog? You put a dog on a leash. So the kid's behaving like a dog. Smells something, runs off. Sees something in the supermarket, immediately goes off and pulls it all off the shelf. Yeah. Bhagavatam say? What's the answer that the Bhagavatam gives? Life's desires should be, or life's work should be to fulfill the necessities, the basic necessities. So, you know, what are our basic necessities? Food, sleep, shelter, some sense gratification. Right? You can't live without sense gratification. And so there are prescriptions or guidelines for those activities. And so we try, as devotees, this is why the Varnashram system is important, because we then are given guidelines for each of the Varnas and Ashramas within which we can act with the aim of pleasing Krishna, because as mentioned, Varnashrama Charavata, ultimately the Varnashrama and the actions of Varnashrama are meant for the pleasure of Vishnu. Right? Vishnu Arajate, isn't it? Something, I can't remember that. It's meant for the worshipping Lord Vishnu. So, you know, we have so many desires. But we need to trim that down. You know, there's wants and there's needs. So I want this, I want that, I want the other thing. But what do we really need? We need to eat. You know, and every now and again we can have a feast. Right? On a parents' day or to commemorate what we fast first, then we have a feast. And even then you shouldn't eat too much. Right? And we remember Lord Nityananda, we remember Lord Chaitanya. What have we got coming up? Lord Nisringadev. But we remember Lord Nisringadev by fasting on his appearance day, then having a feast. So, you know, there are ample opportunities for appropriate engagement in all activities with a spiritual focus. Otherwise, if we were to try and satisfy all of our desires, we'd go nuts. Well, first of all, we wouldn't be able to do it. We wouldn't be able to do it. One of the reasons why we have to be careful in this culture that we're living in is because, you know, the advertising industry discovered early on in the piece that you can just tempt people. And then immediately their desire to have it comes up. You just put it in front of them. Right? Or if, you know, if it's not very attractive, like, you know, wheels of a motor car or whatever, then you put a scantily clad woman next to it and then people want to buy it. Right? So we have to be careful about wants and what the mind brings up, because it'll bring up all sorts of things. Just driving down the road, we'll see somebody's got a Mercedes, and I wouldn't mind that. Then we drive past a two-story house on Curford Road, we're looking at it, ooh, I wouldn't mind one of those. Then we see somebody dressed in a new pair of jeans, we think, oh, not bad, you'll have some of those as well. So just walking around, we'll be bombarded with all these impressions and a desire to want them. So that's why we have to be, that's why, you know, the example of the tortoise is given. The tortoise withdraws its senses when it's dangerous. But when it's not dangerous to act, then they're out and they're very active. So we're active in devotional service, and we try to control the senses when it's appropriate. If we were to try to satisfy every desire that we had from time immemorial, then we'd be impossible. Commander. Matter cannot create.
Yeah, and the answer was, you know, like, there's nobody. I was thinking something else, this something found wrong. That statement is kind of until the Sakdam stage, the creation stage takes place.
At the what?
Creation.
Oh, creation.
Yeah.
No, but the creation is a start, because the Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu enters into the whole universe, and it's already, I guess before that, impregnated with living entities. So as soon as the living entities are there, then time, and then off it goes. And the living entities wake up, they've been sleeping in Mahavishnu, feeling okay, I suppose. Right, because they're in the body of the Lord. Right? And we think, wow, peace, man, that's what we want. But then we're back into the material world. Breakfast ready? Okay, last question. So, I was just thinking, is breakfast ready? And then I knew it wasn't, because the Chincharupa hasn't opened up the door yet. When a Chincharupa is cooking and everything's ready, then you have to stand at attention and get on honour the prasadam. Otherwise you get in trouble. Got in trouble many times. So, at that point, the living entities are within, and so it then moves. The living entities, somewhat unconscious in the form of Mahavishnu, but then when the material energy is reactivated, they then remember their desires, and so then they start acting. And then, you know, then the whole craziness starts. Although, mind you, you know, I guess it's such a yuga when it all starts, isn't it? Starts with such a yuga, right? So, you know, it's very elevated at that point. People, it's in the Kali Yuga that everything starts to go really crazy. At the what stage?
Sakta stage, the creation. After the creation has been taking place,
yeah.
The matter even has a life. That's why we consider the rocks has life and the trees has life and things like that. But it cannot.
Do we?
Yes.
The rock has life?
That's what it
means. Yeah, I guess so, because it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. But, you know, matter in and of itself is basically dull and inert. If you take a piece of dirt from the ground,
it's not interchangeable.
You can watch it for a long time, but it won't do anything. Right? If we stare at dirt, it won't do anything. But yes, the presence of the living entity in matter makes the matter move. And not move too, because what is it? Krishna says, what is it? Sucharacharam? Moving
and not
The moving and non moving living entities.
That's what my point was.
Yeah.
Actually, my answer
Okay.
is that it's not independent,
but
unless you love the Lord, it will not be created.
Yeah, there are some inner living entities. But you know, they're trees and whatever. Non-moving means they don't move around. But what's the?
Yeah, the one point was like it is not the matter was lifeless until the stage of sattva creation.
Yeah.
But after that, it is having life.
Yeah.
But it is not recreated. It's not produced because it's, unless it is the will of the Lord, because Lord says. Under my direction,
yeah.
It was.
But we see in the human form how it's living while the spirit soul is there, but then when the spirit soul goes, what happens? It disintegrates. Right. So we can see from that that the matter. doesn't have life. Certainly that's what Prabhupada says anyway. Read Life Comes from Life and he clarifies it. Of course, you know, then there's all other living entities that come along. Bugs and worms and things, and they eat up the body. But yeah, it certainly does appear as if it's alive, but we know that it's not. Alright, let's have some prasadam. Prasadam gives life. What is it? This is one of the lower stages of consciousness. I eat, therefore I am.